Welcome back, everyone, to another fun and informative episode of Nest in Style, where we bring you the latest home and garden tips for seasonal living. Welcome back, Teresa. How are you?
It's definitely harvest time. I mean, the tomatoes are bursting, the peppers are bursting, everything's bursting out, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Well, and I made an awesome, awesome eggplant pizza just last night. A little on the garlicky side. You know, I'm going to have to adjust that next time I make it. But this is one of my favorite eggplant pizza recipes because I made another one last year and it was so gross. But this one looked pretty good. I was pretty impressed.
Well, I'm actually growing four different types of eggplants, Jamie. I'm growing, and I'm showing it to Jamie through Skype, listeners. This is a Rosa Bianca. It's a beautiful little round Italian heirloom that never gets bitter. And this is a little finger. It's like a short thing that's not very long, only a couple inches long, black. A hybrid that's great in containers. And this is Fairy Tale, which is also beautiful in containers, small and purple and white striped. And calliope, which are these really cute, round, purple, and white striped eggplants. And I tell you, Jamie, you know, if you remember in grocery gardening, I wrote about produce and nutrition. And eggplants are not necessarily a nutritional powerhouse, but they do have these wonderful phytochemicals that give them their color. And those are powerful antioxidants. So I would just encourage everybody to remember that if you're growing eggplants, that they are in the same family as tomatoes and peppers. So if you grew tomatoes and peppers in one part of your garden this year, you'll want to grow eggplants in another part of your garden next year. And don't forget that many of these eggplants that I mentioned do grow great in containers, and they ripen quickly too, so they're very good for those cold climates.
Yeah, and if I could just say, because I'm actually growing mine in a galvanized container, and I actually will include that photo on this podcast page, so just to kind of give an idea. And I planted it with some cute little dark purplish and lime green annuals, and it's really cool to just kind of skirt around the eggplant and just make it a little more interesting, right?
Absolutely.
You can mix ornamentals and vegetables together and it will still look fabulous.
And I just wanted to say that actually these plants, particularly the little finger eggplant, is huge. And it's just a gorgeous plant with beautiful purple flowers. In fact, I'll put a picture of a recent harvest so that everybody can see how gorgeous this fruit is. And that's just a reminder, everybody, that botanically eggplants are fruit and not vegetables.
Good distinction. Anyway, and just one last thing about eggplant. I tend to like the little Japanese long skinny ones better than the big fat ones.
Me too. That's why you can tell that I picked the ones that are... I personally have a hard time with those big black ones. They're beautiful, but they just don't taste as good to me. And like the Rosa Bianca, never gets bitter. So many of these varieties that I mentioned, they just taste better.
I really do. And I roasted them last night for the pizza with just olive oil, salt, and pepper. And they were sweet. Oh my gosh, it was so good. I mean, total new appreciation for eggplants. So if you didn't like them before, try the Japanese variety. They're great for containers, like Teresa said, and you might like this variety better.
Well, yeah, and don't limit yourself to only the Japanese variety. There's a lot of other varieties,
too. That's true. So, like you said.
Yeah, in fact, many of the ones I mentioned. But there's a lot of eggplant varieties out there. So there's one for your climate.
Perfect.
Well, great.
Hey, before we get on to your fabulous interview, because Yvette actually talks about eggplants and combining ornamentals with edibles, which is great,
yes.
My favorite topic. She's like one of my favorite people, too. I mean, she's pretty awesome. So,
I know.
You know, Teresa and I did this little dance contest, and okay, Teresa can like shake it down better than I can, so she won the toss-up.
I did. Whatever. Yvette, I had to dance to win an interview with Yvette, but there you go. I mean.
Before we get on to that, let's first congratulate our Nest in Style book giveaway winners. We got 91 entries, Teresa.
It was rocking. We had so many good comments on our Facebook page.
I know.
I couldn't believe what people were putting in there about what they were preserving and the combinations. It really was mouthwatering.
It was. It was. And I got to tell you how excited the winners were when they found out that they won the free book giveaway. And we're going to have more of those. Okay. It was so fun. Yeah.
And tell again what the name of that book was, Jamie.
It was Canning and Preserving Your Own Harvest by Carla Emery and Lorene Edwards Forkner. And if you didn't get a chance to win that, I'm offering a pretty special deal on AHA Modern Living. I actually sell the book, so you can get a pretty cool discount as well as some free seats.
Cool. Excellent. Good timing for that book, too.
Yes.
As Jamie mentioned, we did have to fight for this interview with a dance competition. I won because of my innate grace. And Jamie is being a good loser about the whole thing. Just on this topic, I have to say, I think she gives a lot of really great tips in this interview for readers to think about as we're in the, you know, the dog days of summer, the end of summer. And yet, many of the topics we're talking about really apply to the type of garden planning that people start in the fall. Don't you think, Jamie?
I think, yes, the very relevant topic right now. And also, Yvette actually did an interview for me. So I actually got the chance to interview her first, if I can just say that for the record, at the San Francisco Flower and Garden Show. And she talked about texture, okay, and how texture can really tickle the senses. So we'll look for that link. And you guys can go check that out after you listen to Teresa's interview. And I got to say, a lot of things to learn from Yvette Soler. So listen up.
I have the pleasure this morning of being with Yvette Soler, who got up at the break of dawn in Los Angeles to talk with me today about saving water. Hi, Yvette.
Hi, Teresa. Thank you so much for having me on. I'm really excited about it.
Ah, it's a pleasure. Today we're going to talk about saving water in the garden, whether you have edibles or ornamentals growing. And Yvette, who you may know as the Germanatrix on the Twitter, that's also the name of her business. And she's a landscape designer whose clients have appeared in Sunset Magazine, I know, and probably a number of other magazines too. Is that right, Yvette?
Yeah, and we've had Work in Garden Design, Cottage Living, Metropolitan Home. So yeah, it's been great. There's a lot of great gardens being shown, and none of them. Let's see. No, actually, very few of them having lawn.
Oh, interesting. So you've had all these articles in Cottage Living and Metropolitan Home. And because you're in Southern California, you've really had to learn how to deal with water shortages from very on.
Absolutely. When I was a baby gardener, when I first started, it was in the middle of an incredibly intense drought. And so xeriscaping was the way I entered into gardening. And the first thing I did just when I learned on my own garden was rip out my lawn. And so I don't know any other way of gardening personally. I've never mown a lawn. I've never had to deal with all of, you know, the headaches that come with lawn. And it just makes so much sense to me to design gardens that have spaces that are more useful than lawn. Of course, you know, when people have children, everybody wants a little patch of lawn. And even though I can be a bit of a control freak with my clients, I do allow a small bit of lawn for children and their play. But that's it. That's all.
Well, you're right, Yvette. I think that we become such slaves to our lawn. And I used to have a neighbor in California. He would actually dye his grass green. And I won't say any more because I don't want to embarrass him, but it was so important to him to have green grass in Southern California that he would actually put a little food dye and dye his grass green.
Isn't that crazy? And it makes no sense. It's about, you know, in Southern California, we're not supposed to have grass. We're in the middle of a desert. You know, lawn is completely anathema to us, and our water bills prove it. Everybody who has lawns has increased water bills. Those of us who grow other plants, you know, we're riding fine.
So Yvette, by living in Southern California and having to deal with water shortages, you really have seen that it is very possible to have a beautiful edible ornamental garden without wasting a lot of water. Isn't that right?
Oh, absolutely. One thing that I was not willing to give up was the look of a lush, full, sexy garden. I mean, I really wanted that. Because again, when I first started gardening, I was looking at, you know, books that were written by Penelope Hobhouse and Christopher Lloyd, and I was deeply in love with the English cottage style. And all I was thinking was, well, how do I do that? And how do I do that here? And how do I not break the bank? How do I do it responsibly? And so, you know, turning to the use of responsible drought tolerance and succulents and natives and you know, thinking outside of the box for how I use my garden. Because I think that's something that makes a lot of sense to me, that a lot of people sort of like do the default mechanism, that lawn space is kind of like what we do. We have lawn because we have a house. We have a house, therefore we have lawn.
Right.
But actually, if you think about how you want to use your property, you'll usually figure out that you want other things. You know, you want things that you want entertainment space that maybe you don't, you know, you have a lot of events, and maybe you don't want people to trample on a lawn all the time for it to look, you know, kind of shoddy. Maybe you need a little bit more permeable hardscape in there. You may want a vegetable garden instead of lawn, because of course, wherever we put our lawn is where our best sun is. And that's the best place to grow vegetables, you know? So it's something that just makes so much sense if people are thinking, if they don't go to that default.
Well, you mentioned, for example, what are some things that people could do to replace their yards with lawn? You mentioned permeable,
Yes. Yes. Well, you know, for me particularly, I believe that the front lawn is an absolutely useless pass-through space. And once you do something different with that front lawn area, your living life, you know, almost, you're increasing the square footage of your usable property, because people stop just passing through that front yard and they linger and you linger there. So I love courtyards. I love vegetable gardens. I love it when people do, you know, beautiful drought tolerant oases in there. You know, anything, you know, put a fountain, put a destination point in your front yard. Allow it to be just as designed as your backyard. It increases your curb appeal and it increases the usability of your house. It's really, really funny to me to go into neighborhoods where you see lawn after lawn after lawn after lawn, and I just think, my God, that is wasted space. And it's just as uplifting when I'll see that oasis of an edible garden in a front lawn, you know, instead of a front lawn, excuse me, or just a beautiful collection of drought tolerance, or depending on where you live in the country, it doesn't have to be drought tolerance, anything that works within your climate instead of that lawn. Because even if we, you know, even if we have enough water to naturally sustain a lawn, we still need pesticides, herbicides. We still need, you know, chemical fertilizers to keep it glorious. You know,
and
leave
the
lawn.
When we say that, often they're saying, like, you know, people using, you know, Kentucky bluegrass lawns, but there are different types of drought tolerant lawns and such as that you can use as well.
Absolutely.
Like,
yes, there are lovely
and things like
yes.
That.
Yes, don't let my anti-lawn fixation.
I just wanted to broaden the term of lawn, because when we say lawn, we often do think of that Kentucky bluegrass, which is in so many lawns, even though it's not appropriate for many climates. And it does require all that extra water and chemicals that Yvette
and
was just
work.
Mentioning.
And work. I mean, though, you know, keeping, because there are beautiful ways to create an eco-friendly lawn by, you know, by using grasses that are tough and that are appropriate to your climate, not mowing them. Because one of the issues we also need to think of is the kind of power and gas emissions that we use when we're mowing lawn to 2 inches tall.
That's
you know,
true.
It's everything is so connected. And it goes far beyond drought tolerance. And it is something that, you know, for me, I'm really, really passionate about. Online, there's a wonderful page and a group called the Lawn Reform Coalition. And they do, they show fabulous alternatives to lawn. And they also show lovely images of eco lawn. Miriam Goldberger, I believe, is doing, you know, lovely work with an eco-friendly lawn variety, which I think is fantastic because it's that kind of out-of-the-box thinking that keeps us on our toes and makes our gardens fantastic and responsible.
Absolutely. Well, I think you brought up a lot of good points, and we'll make sure to have the link to the Lawn Reform Group on our podcast page. And one of the things that you said, Yvette, that I thought was so interesting is the idea of creating a destination space in the front yard, you know, whether you're using, you know, pebbles or a fountain or a focal point or something, because it is true that so much of our time in our front yard we're spending passing through, we're losing that reason to mingle and stay and talk to our neighbors. And
Yes, Teresa, it's really amazing. As I've been writing this book, one thing that is absolutely that is central, everybody is talking about this, is how their neighborhood relations have completely improved. In a city like I live in Los Angeles, where people tend to be incredibly isolated from their neighbors. But the funny thing is putting food in my front yard, and I've always had a mixed drought tolerant front yard, but putting food in the front yard all of a sudden gets people coming over and asking me questions. And we start talking and we chat and we know each other, and I go over with herbs, and it's really lovely. It makes me feel like we're kind of breaking the dysfunction of this modern isolated society and going back to something that's a little bit more genuine and connected. And I love that. I love the tentacles that gardening can bring into your life, how it just moves you into other spaces of being social. I think it's just fantastic.
Absolutely. I think that's very true. And I think that whole idea of moving more from the way that our grandparents lived with the front porches and the focus on what was happening on the street and your neighbors watching out for everybody, where we live in a modern society where, you know, there really isn't as much use for going out in the yard. And many people live in those subdivisions where they can actually see everybody and everything, so they have like no privacy at all, but that's another whole topic. You know, one thing I wanted to mention, since we have you on the phone and you're such a pro, and you actually have written this wonderful book, which is coming out in the spring of 2011 by Timber Press, and we don't quite know the name of it yet, do we, Yvette? It's kind of top secret.
We don't quite know. Yes,
it's going to be all about like edible front yard food, isn't it? Like credible, beautiful.
Absolutely.
So vegetable gardens can save you some water, feed your family, and still be sexy at all at the same time, and improve neighborhood relationships, right?
See, isn't it magic? Isn't it fantastic? And they probably are the key to world peace. You know, we don't know. If more people did it, I think that we would have something here. Everybody needs to do it. Edibles in the front yard, integrate.
I have to tell you, listeners, that if Yvette sometimes sounds like a little elf, it's not because she is one, although she looks a little elfish. It's because Skype is just not cooperating today. So if her voice is wavering, we apologize about that. But she's such a trooper to just keep talking through to us despite these technical difficulties here.
Oh, I don't mind sounding like an elf when I'm talking to you, Teresa. Not at all.
Well, listen, can you give us some, I know it's kind of early there in LA, but can you give us some practical, easy ways that gardeners can save themselves some water? And as you said, everything is connected. So oftentimes plants require a lot less chemicals as well.
Well, I mean, the funny thing that to me, I mean, there are a couple of things that I do all the time. I plant more because whenever you plant more, be sure to have a really good ground cover layer. You save water because the plants themselves act as a mulch, and they allow you to use less water. The water penetrates the soil easier, and the plants act as like almost like a little umbrella, keeping a hothouse environment for their roots. So planting more may seem counterintuitive, but you end up with a better way to your plants use water better when they're tightly integrated. there's a lot more evaporation when there's lots of distance between your plants. So I like to plant intensively. Another thing that you can do is keep water on your property. That's where the permeable landscape, you know, hardscaping comes in. It's important to not pave in enormous quantities of patio that doesn't have a way to just seep into your soil. I love gravel. I love pavers that have at least, you know, 2 inches in between them, so that all the water that rains in your vicinity just is used on your property. It's very responsible. We don't want that precious water going down storm drains. So when you're planning a garden, try to get a lot of gravel, a lot of pavers, decomposed granite, anything that allows the water to percolate through, that's what you want to use. And again, pretty much anything that you're going to plant other than thirsty marathon or bluegrass, those things are going to be, you know, think water-wise when you're choosing your plants. If I'm in Southern California, I would love to plant peonies. I would love to plant, you know, glorious tropicals with enormous leaves. I love them. I can't do it. I've got to settle for agaves. And you know what? That's okay. To love the thing that loves you back.
That's all very, very good advice, Yvette. And you know, I love the idea of that living mulch that you were describing. And I think, listeners, that's different. When Yvette was talking about planting really close and intensively, she doesn't mean, for example, putting your tomato plants too close together so they don't have air circulation.
Right.
What she means is more creating a situation where your plants are close enough together so that they're actually creating a block from weeds coming up or...
Absolutely, Teresa. Thank you for clarifying that. Yes, I'm especially passionate about ground cover layers. Ground cover, you know, making sure that you have those plants that are a foot tall and under that can spread and knit together. Not only do they define your garden, they give you a lovely detail edge to your garden, but they do help provide that layer that just kind of locks in whatever it is that you know, whatever you water, that sort of locks it in and it maximizes it. And I do like paying attention to air circulation, of course, but, you know, I love a sexy garden and I like things to mix and mingle. So,
so you can push the rules a little bit, folks.
Just a little bit. Don't go crazy.
Well, listen, I want to ask you a question that everybody is been wanting to know, and that is, what is a germinatrix and how did this come about, Yvette?
Well, years and years and years ago, some friends and my husband is in the art world, and so I go to a lot of art openings, and me and some friends who were at art openings noticed that we were sitting around in the corners of the galleries talking about plants and gardens much more than we were talking about art. And so we paid attention to that, and we decided to create a garden club. And I wrote the newsletter, and I called it The Germinator. And I was called The Germinatrix by my friends in the garden club. And it was just a fabulous time. And I love garden clubs. And I just, you know, I think everybody should have one. But that's where it started. And I think that it's grown to mean that I just dominate in the garden.
I see you with the whip. I see you with the whip. Now, I wanted to ask you, are there any other cool water-saving things? For example, I know here in Idaho, we try to water in the morning, so that the plant has plenty of time to dry out during the day, especially if you're wetting their leaves. And are there other things that we could be doing here to save some water?
Well, I believe very strongly, and I, you know, we talked about it a little earlier, mulch. Mulch, mulch, mulch. You know, because we have such problems with water and irrigation, and we do those same things. You know, we're under water restrictions, and so we only water every other day. And a mulch layer just traps that water in. It's amazing. Once you put that extra 2 inches around your garden plants, it's really amazing what happens. You can lock in so much more of what you're using, that precious, precious resource that you know we don't want to waste. And of course, drip irrigation is something that I've explored a lot of. And I use that specifically with my, you know, with my vegetables. I like to do a combination of sprinkler and drip, but drip is fantastic. It really does, you know, just put the water exactly where it's needed. And unless you need, you know, ground cover plants to knit together that really need a wet, you know, surface of soil, then everything can be on drip. And you can really be saving yourself a lot of money, and your plants will actually grow better.
Oh, very good advice. Very good advice. Well, I'll tell you, so is there anything else that I haven't asked you, Yvette, that you just feel compelled you want to say to Nest and Style listeners right now?
Oh my God. Well, you know, one thing that I love the idea of, I could talk forever, but let me rein myself in. I am so passionate about either minimizing or completely eliminating the front yard and planting it with what you love. But also integrate food into whatever garden you have. There's no reason to be a horticultural xenophobe. There's no reason at all. If you don't think that you have room for tomatoes, stick them in between, you know, two beautiful shrubs and let the shrubs be the tomato cage. You know, figure out a way to tuck basil as a front of the border plant. You'll be amazed. These are beautiful plants that have amazing color, and you can up the ornamental value of your garden and the edible value of your garden. And I mean, it's just amazing to me that we have all of these beautiful plants that, you know, we don't have to look like a farm anymore. I mean, although farms are gorgeous, but we can have an ornamental garden that we can eat and we can enjoy, and that can just really add so much to our lives. I'm passionate about integration, no more segregation.
I'm with you. And I've always kind of had a suburban garden, even when I lived in a renovated barn in Boston.
Uh-huh.
So I've always kind of had to mix my vegetables with my fruit and with flowers. So to me, this is like this new trend. I think for many of us who have been gardening for a while, it's like, well, we're glad you all caught up.
Exactly. You're a little tardy to the party, people.
If you like to grow veggies, you'll find a place. And you're absolutely right. Some of them are just beautiful, especially the old heirlooms. Oh, but many of these hybrids. And I'm just growing a ton of, like, gorgeous eggplants. I just can't wait till they all...
Oh, my God. Teresa, you're singing my song. Eggplant is one of my favorite edibles to grow. I mean, the beautiful burnished dark stems of an eggplant, they're so gothic and witchy. They have such a beautiful ornamental appeal. And if you combine that eggplant with a red Reuben basil and underplant it with some beautiful variegated thyme, you have an amazing ornamental moment in your garden that you can then eat.
Absolutely.
What could be better than that?
Absolutely. That's so true. And I mean, I've got like squashes, some beautiful like white and yellow scallop squashes growing in between ornamentals. I mean, these plants alone are so beautiful, and the fruit colors, especially when you get the unusual colors. So I think we should just really experiment, don't you?
Absolutely. I mean, and all of these things take less water than a lawn. I mean, all of these things that feed us, feed our eye, take less water than any of the thirsty, you know, thirsty plants and turf grass that we want to be replacing with. I mean, it's one of those things that once people realize it, I believe, again, you know, yes, we may be a little tardy to the party, but let's go to the party. Let's plant edibles. Let's plant, you know, drought tolerance. Let's make them work together. I think
cool,
that's just fabulous.
Covers. Yeah, ground covers. And let's not forget natives. Natives are beautiful sometimes. Just beautiful, especially with a good haircut, you know? Prune them up. Prune them up. They're just as good as the more cultured ones, right?
Absolutely. I like my things a little wild.
I know. You should see
culture.
My garden. That's definitely a little on the wild side, too. Everything's self-seeding itself like crazy. I always feel like at certain times of the year, Annie's annuals would be proud, you know, with the poppy starter hats.
Oh my God. I am just so excited because I have the drama queen. Papa Ver drama queen was in my garden this year, and I am now taking the seeds and I use those pods like magic wands. I just sprinkle them everywhere.
You will be sorry because I have like California poppies in one part of my garden. I swear I feel like I'm in the Sierras or something like that. But that's what I did, especially with chamomile. I was just like taking the little petals and just letting them fly in the air. And now that chamomile is just like, who knows what I have spread. But at least
no, you could probably start an herb farm with the chamomile that's going to be coming up next year.
Hopefully everybody will like the smell. So, but anyway, we'll leave that for our invasive plant series. But Yvette, thank you so much for taking time with me this morning. I really appreciate you coming on the show.
Oh, Teresa, it is a pleasure. I am such a fan, and I just thank you so much for asking me. It's just lovely talking to you, and it's so fun talking about these issues. I couldn't be more pleased. Thanks so much.
Well, we can't wait to see your book, and we'll be sure and put lots of links to your website so people can get the latest update.
Okay, thank you so much, Teresa. Thank you, Jamie. Thank you, listeners. I'm really excited. Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
As always, Teresa, that was a really, really great interview. And if I could just point out, one of the things I really liked about what Yvette had to say was, you know, losing the lawn. Not everybody can lose their lawn. I have a lawn, for goodness sakes, in my front yard. But what I have done is I do have an ornamental bed out on my parking strip as well as in front of my house that I tend to regularly. So I'm out in front of my yard probably just as much as I am in my backyard. And what it actually does, like Yvette said, is it really creates a neighborly environment. People walking by, they're asking questions. Ooh, I love that plant. What is it? And what's really cool is, you know, later in the season, you see that the plant that they asked you about is now in their front yard. So I think that's pretty cool.
And I think that's what Yvette was trying to point out, is that the more we actually turn our front yard into a place where there's a reason to go out there, whether it's working in an ornamental bed and on your vegetable garden out there or whatever, the important thing is to get out there and use that front yard as a great outdoor living space and save water and chemicals at the same time so everybody's better off.
That's exactly right. And another thing, you know, talking about lawns, okay, maybe you don't want to get rid of the lawn, but having a more eco-friendly lawn alternative is a great idea. And she mentioned Miriam of Wildflower Gardens, and they have a product called Eagle Lawn, and it's great. It's a varieties of seven fine fescues, and we're actually selling that on ahamodernliving.com. So if you're interested in a lawn alternative, go check it out.
And Jamie, one more thing. We also will have the link to the lawn reform group.
Yeah.
So you can find more ways to save water and replace more and more turf from your garden and put in other types of garden beds. So that resource will be on our website too.
All right, let's not forget where you can find these helpful resources, okay? Because if you're listening to us in your car this very moment, and please don't be writing any of this stuff down, but you can always find the resources we're talking about on our website, www.aha, and that's spelled A-H-A, homeandgarden.com. All right, so come check us out.
And I did also want to point out before we end the show that Jamie and I are brainstorming a lot of really, really great giveaways. So keep your eyes out, because we're not only giving away great giveaways, but we got a lot of really great guests coming up that you're going to enjoy over the next few months. But in the meantime, don't forget, you still can plant stuff.
Until next time, go grow something.